those of you who are season one listeners, welcome back. And to those of you who are new to my podcast, welcome to season two of the Pregnancy Wellness Podcast, hosted by me, Pip. I'm a practicing midwife and enthusiast of all things women's wellness, especially when it comes to pregnancy and motherhood. Do you find yourself with lots of pregnancy questions unanswered? Do you feel that extra midwifery support would be useful to you? Do you fully understand how to enhance your pregnancy wellness? You are in good hands. This podcast is for you. Alongside this, I have also been busy creating a 12-month pregnancy journey support group and course to provide you with a whole package of expert wellness and pregnancy information to guide you every step of the way, leaving no stone unturned from trimester one right through to trimester four. And I'm now enrolling expectant mums in their first trimester. Spaces will be limited, so if you think this sounds like you, get in touch through my social media or at midwifepip.com. Over the upcoming 15 episodes, I'm excited to be chatting with expert guests and real women on this season to bring you honest, evidence-based information and top tips to navigating your pregnancy wellness journey. I hope these episodes leave you feeling positive and empowered. And don't forget, for more support and birth preparation, to check out my website, midwifepip.com, for your free birth preference plan download. I hope that you are sat comfortably and ready for the midwife chats and knowledge bombs to commence.
When it comes to deciding where to give birth, there are a few options. We have consultant-led units, midwifery-led birthing centres, or even the comfort of your own home. Various health and pregnancy factors may influence the recommendation for your place of birth and your choice. But having accurate, honest information about your birthplace choices is fundamental to helping you make the right decision for you. On this week's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by a fellow midwife, Kerry, and little Harriet. Now, Kerry's career has taken a different path to me, as she's been practicing as an independent midwife in the northwest of England for the last 3 years. Kerry's career has been based in the community setting and in the attendance of many home births. Kerry is passionate about the ethos of community midwifery and getting to know the families that she cares for. Then being privileged enough to attend their home birth is exciting on the top for Kerry. Kerry's independent practice means that she now teaches antenatal, hypnobirthing and breastfeeding classes. And when Kerry is not supporting home birth and educating new parents, she also shares my passion for exercise and fitness. Kerry teaches aquanative classes at her local swimming pool and during lockdown has adapted to teach online fitness classes to encourage us all to keep active in the safety of our own homes. Kerry has used her Instagram page at midwife_Kerry to help provide new mums with postpartum advice and support. But more than all of that, Kerry is also a mum to two girls, a toddler and newborn Harriet, which understandably keeps her very busy. So I'm grateful that Kerry has found some time to come on and chat to us about home birth today. So welcome, Kerry, and little 10-week-old Harriet, who no one else can see, but I've got the privilege of seeing on the webcam, and she is gorgeous.
Thank you. You're saying hello. You're voicing your little voice on the podcast already, or debut.
Which I love because, you know, that's how life is at the moment. We are quite often stuck at home. We're recording this podcast at home. And it's the reality of motherhood. So it's good to be real and honest.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's this massive balance during lockdown and being a mum, being a midwife, or whatever profession you're in, you know, it's challenging at this time, but It's fun, it's all fun and games.
It is, and we're all learning so much every day.
Yeah.
Now, Kerry, I just wonder whether you could kind of outline what independent midwifery is, because I know lots of ladies listening might not actually have heard of that phrase or that take on the profession, and so how that kind of differs from kind of working as a midwife in the NHS.
Yeah, so I originally started out my career after qualifying as a midwife. So I qualified in 2014 after 3 years training. I did my training at Salford University and I went straight into community with the NHS after qualifying. I absolutely loved home birth and the education really about, you know, empowering women, because knowledge is power. And I think that more so within women's choice around childbirth as well. So, yeah, my sort of career path started out in the NHS on community. So we operated where we worked on community, but then rotated and covered the birth centre as well, along with their core staff. And then I made the choice after around about 3 years, I became an independent midwife. So the easiest way to explain it is it's basically like a self-employed midwife. So we all do very similar roles, or we can do, but independent midwifery is where you're not employed by anyone, so it's your own business. And that it can take the format, basically independent midwives can do pretty much anything in terms of, you can go into education, providing education, you can provide scans if you're sonography trained midwife, antenatal classes. So I teach antenatal classes, hypnobirthing, breastfeeding classes, fitness classes, and aquanatal, like you said. And yeah, that's my sort of speciality, because I really feel that education and around childbirth is so empowering, so that then women can make informed choices, really. And I know it's a cliched saying within midwifery, you know, and they're all buzzwords, but they are so important, and especially round about now with COVID, etc. I think it's even more important that you're aware of choices around childbirth.
Definitely, Kerry, I couldn't agree more. I think that information and accurate information, because let's face it, there's loads of information out there, but some of it isn't stuff that we'd recommend following. And that was really the kind of whole ethos behind this podcast, was getting that real information out to women to support making those informed choices. Because as you say, you can't make a choice or a decision about anything in your birth journey unless you've had all of the correct information, the pros, the cons, the alternatives, and kind of everything that's open to you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think that there's a good and a bad thing with social media. I mean, the brilliant thing is that there's midwives, you know, similar to me, you, and there's a sort of network of us at the moment that all sort of, you know, we've met on social media and we share each other's posts, and, you know, we're all doing this fantastic work. But then the downside of social media is that people have access to accounts that aren't very legitimate, or, you know, I see quite a lot of advice that from other sections and not healthcare professionals, and they're not regulated, sadly, like we are. So, you know, we have regulations, we have to adhere to the NMC code, and we have to revalidate every 3 years to make sure that we're up to date with our knowledge. Other professions, especially like the fitness industry, for example, you know, there's companies that make money because of celebrities a lot of the time, but actually the information that they're giving out is not accurate or not correct sometimes in terms of the guidance that we would give out.
Yeah, that's a really great comparison, actually. You're right, because there's definitely a lot of dodgy information in that industry.
Yeah.
It does go across everything. And like you say, that's the good side and the maybe not so good conversation.
Yeah.
So, Kerry, I don't know about you, but since kind of COVID and lockdown, I've definitely seen a rise in an interest in home birth, or an interest in actual successful home births that women are having. And I completely just guess, I don't know what the evidence is about this, that we're probably seeing a rise because, one, people don't want to attend hospital if they don't need to, because we know that's potentially putting you at risk of catching COVID-19. And also with the restrictions on kind of birthing partners, when they can be in, how many you can have at home, you can kind of control that because it's your environment. Have you kind of seen something similar?
Yeah, and it's interesting because a lot of the questions and the comments that come in via my Instagram page is around that as well. There's so many times that people say, am I allowed a home birth? And I teach hypnobirthing and we don't really like the word allowed because of, you know, it's that massive power shift. You know, am I allowed? Well, yeah, of course, you're allowed to do whatever you want, you know. And my analogy is to women, and it's something that I always say, and it's a really silly example, but just bear with me with it. So I always say to women, listen, if you wanted to give birth up a tree in your house, then as a midwife, I would be there to support you in that. So it's my job as a midwife, I would go through the risks and the benefits of you giving birth in that said tree. So I don't know, it might be the pros of it, might be that your mum might have given birth in that tree, so it's sentimental value, you really wanted to carry on the family tradition, I don't know. The cons of it is that you might fall out the tree, you know, not easy to access. So as a midwife, my role would be to make that situation as safe as possible for you. So I would put, I don't know, a mattress or an inflatable under the tree. I'd get some ladders. And although it's quite a obscure example, that is kind of what midwifery is about. It's about giving that information to women, getting them to make this informed choice. And what choice would be right for one woman wouldn't be right for the other as well. I'll talk a little bit about sort of risk and how that fits into home birth, because I think we'll come on to it a bit naturally later on, but that's always an interesting sort of point as well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I mean, yeah, I've never seen anyone give birth in a tree. Maybe one day. Who knows? But no, you're totally right. You're totally right. So I guess women probably hear a lot about hospital birth or midwife-led birth centre birth. What is a home birth, Kerry? What kind of does that actually look like? And how might it differ from birth in a hospital setting?
So it's quite simply giving birth at home. And the history behind it was obviously, you know, hundreds of years ago, we would always have given birth at home as women. Yes, mortality rates were increased a lot more than they are now. But arguably that's to do with the scanning procedures, because we've, you know, things like placental issues, we wouldn't have picked up on scans hundreds of years ago because there weren't any. So we used to have home births centuries ago all the time. Then the introduction of the NHS and the shift towards this kind of medical model of care came in. And then it became the norm for women to go into birth and birth in hospitals. And that's kind of what happened because the NHS is a free service. There's a massive drive and shift towards giving birth within hospitals. However, I think more recently, there's definitely been a massive shift towards home births. Now, it depends what literature you read, but the national home birth rate is around about 1%. It was a few years ago. I think it's actually moved more to 2.5% at the moment. So there is a slight increase in it, which is good. I know that there's a local trust near me that my very good friend was a midwife at, and they operated and their home birth rate was around about 20 to 25% at one point.
Wow, that's
amazing. Yeah, it was brilliant, yeah. They operate like a massive continuity of care, and it would be their own midwife that stood on call for them. So as a midwife, I think it would be, you know, it's a really, really big ask to do that and a big commitment, but their home birth rates were absolutely fantastic. And more importantly, the experience that you give into the women as well is just a massive, massive experience, more positive experience I've found.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I've definitely never heard of a home birth rate quite that high.
Yeah.
I used to work in a trust where they did a similar caseloading model and the home birth rate was quite high, but my goodness, not almost a quarter. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the kind of history. But comparing home births to births on the birth centre and the deliver, I don't know what people call them, different things, the labour ward, delivery suite, the obstetric units.
Yeah, those are different jobs for the same building, really.
Yeah. So I would say that home births are very similar to birth centre births, in depending on what your birth centre is and how the environment is, etc. Because I'm aware that some are quite outdated units. But the one that I was privileged to work at was the Royal Oldham Hospital, and their birth centre is absolutely phenomenal. It's so nice. It's, you know, there's diffusers, there's dim lights, there's sparkly lights, there's plumbing pools, you know, lovely artwork, positive birth affirmations in artwork. It was just fantastic. And the birth centre is almost that in between. So it's when women don't really want to give birth at home. They're kind of thinking about it, but they're not confident enough to 100% give birth at home, but they want to go into the birth centre, to the hospital, then they would more or less go to the birth centre. The delivery suite, again, depending on what delivery suites you work at or you go into, sometimes can be a little bit outdated, but they're very medicalised. You know, when you walk in, generally the first things that you'll see are the medical bed and the resuscitaire, which sometimes when you're in labour is probably not the most positive thing to see. But again, you can always make that birth environment your own. So I had a home birth with Imogen, my first little girl, planned home birth with Harriet. However, things didn't go 100% to plan, and we ended up going in when she was quite over a date, 17 days over a date. And I went in, and it was the delivery suite that I went into, and my sort of choices that I wanted a pool. And as soon as I walked into the room, there was just equipment around, and it was nothing like being at home, you know, the lovely experience that I'd had with giving birth to Imogen. So me and my midwife did a bit of feng shui of the room, and we covered up the resuscitaire with a sheet, you know, we dimmed the lights, we moved some equipment around, and, you know, we transformed it into actually quite a nice little environment for my birth experience. So
yeah, that's amazing to hear, Carrie, actually, because I'm really passionate about that, in that we can plan for birth in whatever building we like or wherever that might be recommended, but actually that actual space, you can create whatever bubble you like.
Yeah.
You can have dim lighting wherever you might be. You can have nice lavender sprays or oils wherever you might be.
Yeah.
Wherever you might be. And that stems from at home, all the way up to the other kind of extreme, I suppose, which could be a theatre setting, but actually that environment you can absolutely replicate.
Yeah.
In different places. So I think for ladies, maybe like yourself with Harriet, who plan a home birth, and then maybe there's some twists and turns and it doesn't quite go to plan A, if you like, and actually lots of that preparation work that you've done will completely transport with you to where you do eventually give birth to your baby.
Yeah, and I think that's massively important as well, especially when you think about sort of birth trauma, and not so much trauma in a physical sense sometimes, but birth trauma as in emotionally, because a lot of people, when they write a birth plan, if things don't go to that plan A, like you said, you know, that's where you get, you know, a lot of issues around mental health postnatally. So I think that's really important to, you know, you can make birth a really lovely experience, whether it be a home birth, whether it be a planned cesarean. Obviously I rave about home births. I've had one, I planned another. I remember giving birth to Imogen, and it was just the most relaxed thing ever. I wish that I would have recorded it. That's my one big regret with her birth. Because it was just so calm and so peaceful. You know, it was in the conservatory. I couldn't hire a birth pool. I couldn't get hold of one. So I actually bought a lazy spa from B&Q.
Brilliant.
She was born in the lazy spa in the conservatory, and it was just so lovely. And I remember the placenta still being in, and I was holding her, and I just said, that was just brilliant, I'd do that all again. And the placenta hadn't even come out at that point. You know, it was just it was really, really lovely. And I just wish that people knew that there was that option sometimes, because a lot of women don't even consider it as an option. And that's what really saddens me. When I'm not saying that hospital is a bad experience and home birth is a good experience, because you can have a good experience anywhere, but when you've had such a positive experience, you kind of want everybody else to be able to have a bit of that as well, or at least have that option.
Your home birth experience with Imogen, Carrie, it sounds beautiful. Could you kind of just, in a snapshot, I suppose, just describe that to us a little bit in terms of your personal experience?
Yeah, so I started off labouring. I had a show about 2 o'clock in the morning. Just got into the bath. My tightenings were every 10 minutes. And as soon as I got into the bath, they just fired up to being 5 minutes apart. And I think it's because I was so relaxed at home. I rang my midwife at about 5 o'clock in the morning. And 7 o'clock in the morning, I got into the pool in the lazy spa in the conservatory. Again, it was just really calm. My mum came round and she was just pottering around doing my ironing and keeping out of the way, really, but just being there in case we needed her. My partner was there. He was just in and out, just topping up the pool with water. And my two midwives were there as well with me. And that's one of the other positive things, that you get two midwives with you generally at home birth as well. Yeah, and they didn't really talk much. They just watched me, and I was practicing hypnobirthing, and I literally just breathed through them and breathed through the sort of pushing stage, as people know it. I didn't really do any pushing. It was just breathing. And she came out. And as a midwife, you know all the sort of the biology and the anatomy and the physiology of childbirth. And it was really strange because I'll always describe it as I could feel her actually coming through my pelvis and coming. I could feel it all. It was like just... I could see it all in the textbook diagrams, and it was just happening. It was sort of really crazy. And she was born really nicely in the pool. And yeah, it was such a gentle, calm experience. I didn't have any music on because music is like a massive thing to me. And I had a playlist, but I literally wanted silence at the time. I just didn't want any music. So it was just nice and peaceful, calm. Yeah, and she was born at home. So it's always nice as well having your home address on a birth certificate as well.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so idyllic.
Yeah, I just I've set it up with sparkly lights and everything, but it was morning time coming into daytime when she was born, so we didn't really feel the benefit of this twinkly lights. But hey ho.
Oh, and I bet your conservatory now is such a special place, having made those memories in it.
Yeah, well, it's now Imogen's playroom, so she gets to play in there all the time.
Love it. And that's an awesome story, isn't it, going forward, that she was born in a lazy spa. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows you can improvise in whatever way you need, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and you don't have to have you don't have to have a pool. You can give birth in the bath at home. You don't have to give birth in the water at home. There's been ladies that have set the birth pool up in the garden because it's been, you know, in the hot heat of the summer. They've said, you know, even if it happened overnight, I'm still so hot all the time that I just want to go outside. And as long as it's kept up to temperature, then, you know, midwives are really good at working around things, I think, so.
Oh yeah, we're super imaginative for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
We forget babies in this world sometimes.
Yeah.
Now, Kerry, I don't know about you, but whenever I speak to women about their options in terms of giving birth and the place to give birth and the option of giving birth in the comfort of their own home, I think the number one question that follows on most ladies' minds is, well, is it safe? And we seem to, I think, like you explained really at the beginning, home birth was normal practice years ago. And then certainly, definitely in my mum's generation, no one gave birth at home. It was like, why would you do that? You go into hospital, that's just what you did. And that just became accepted and that became the norm. And then as if we started to shift back towards trying to give birth in our home settings again, I think that's the number one question on most people's minds is it a safe option?
Yeah. So there was the Better Birth study that was done, I think it was 10 years ago now. It was 2010, I think it was. So really pivotal study, massive study, looking at the outcomes and everything to do with birthplace settings. So that concluded that home birth was as safe for your second baby, slightly not as safe at first, but it was very, very slight. And I think that figure was massively portrayed. And it's so, so difficult sometimes to explain statistics to women in a very short antenatal appointment. And you don't want to, you know, you never want to lie to women about, you know, what the risks are, what the benefits are. But again, it's portraying, you know, that it was very, very small, almost insignificant, but not quite. So yeah, that was the very basics of the birthplace study. there's been more recent studies. So recently there's been the Lancet that have published that home birth is as safe as hospital births for any mum. So whether that be first time mum, second time mum, which is brilliant because now we don't have to mess about for 10 minutes of an appointment trying to explain this very, very small difference between first time and second time mums. You've got, so if you start or plan a home birth and you start your labour at home, having planned a home birth, there's absolutely rafts of benefits, and those benefits, it doesn't matter then if you are transferred in, you still have that benefit. So you've got less chance of having a cesarean section, less chance of having an instrumental birth, less chance of having an episiotomy, which is a cut down below, and less chance, what was the other things off the top of my head? And at less chance of a third or fourth degree tear as well when you start at home. There's quite a lot more, but they're the significant findings from the Lancet study.
And I suppose they're all the things that we want to avoid, right? You know, generally, unless you're having a planned elective cesarean section, most people want to avoid an emergency one, and most people plan to have a forceps birth with an episiotomy or a tear into their anal sphincter. So that sounds really positive and really great, which is you need to get that message out there. And if women feel that that's not the right choice for them, absolutely fine. But we need to know that it is a choice, don't we?
Yeah. And it's a really interesting point, because there was nice guidelines say that we should be telling women about the different birthplace settings, and it obviously then being a choice for the woman to decide where to give birth. I always have a slight issue with asking them this question at booking appointments, though. Because, you know, they've found out they're pregnant, they've peed on a stick, they're 8 weeks pregnant. They're not looking at, you know, what is going on more than a few weeks ahead, you know. So, yeah, that's always a slight worry about, you know, because then they feel if they choose one place, then they can't change their mind. And that's not the case. You can change your mind throughout your pregnancy. So you can plan to give birth in hospital, but then later on you might think, actually, I fancy a home birth. And that's what happens a lot of the time. Yeah, but nice guidelines say that we should be informing women about all these choices. And there was a maternal survey that was published this year. I think it was around about 3,000 or 4,000 women that completed the survey. And it actually said that 40% of women weren't aware of all their options, which is a significant amount. That's nearly half, well over a third. And also of those, 33% only thought there was one choice around where to give birth. And I think that makes me giggle a little bit, because I think, well, if it's one choice, that's not really a choice. That's pretty much, that's where you're having your baby.
What you're doing, isn't it? There's no choice.
Yeah. Which is really against the sort of my midwifery ethos, and I'm sure yours, about giving women choice around, you know, everything, where you have your baby, the type of birth you have, who's present. And with home births, there's just so many sort of pros and not a lot of cons, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, it's having that information. And I suppose there's a difference between saying to women, so these are the potential places to birth your baby, and actually asking them to make a decision. So you could change your mind up until the point where your baby's coming out. You know, you could plan to give birth at home, and then actually at some point you think, no, actually this doesn't feel comfortable anymore, or something crops up and you're transferred to hospital. Likewise, up until the point that you're in labour, you could change your mind about that hospital birth, but it's having that information, isn't it?
You
need to be making some improvements by the sounds.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing is around home birth and how safe it is, you know, the midwife that attends your home birth will pretty much all of the time be a community midwife, and community midwives, that is their forte. You know, we our specialism is home births and you know, antenatal appointments, postnatal appointments, visiting you in your community setting. So, you know, if you asked a doctor to come to a home birth, I think that an obstetric doctor wouldn't be very good at a home birth. Likewise, I wouldn't be able to perform a cesarean section, you know. So the midwife who will be at your home birth is going to practice as safe as she can. If there is any sort of doubt that something is not going to plan, not going quite right, your midwife will be there to make things safe. So she will either transfer you in, you know, obviously there'll be a discussion around it first. It won't just be, you know, you're going in. It'll be, I think that something's not quite right, you know, I'll keep an eye on it. And there's always a plan of care, but the the threshold of transferring somebody in at home is a little bit lower, and that's just because it takes a little bit of time to get into hospital. But yeah, and that's another thing that people say, you know, around, is it safe? Well, they say, you know, I live, you know, half an hour away from the local hospital. Yeah, you live half an hour away, but in an ambulance, it's generally not half an hour. It'd be a lot quicker. And things don't generally go wrong just like that. There's normally, you know, we're trained to spot things going wrong and at an early opportunity as well. So we can make that plan and get you into hospital safely.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And like you say, midwives are always planning three steps ahead. So we're make sure that we keep things within that realms of normality. And if it's not like that's the way, then escalating that for sure.
Yeah. And we have, and we also have as well, you know, equipment with us to deal with any emergencies at home. And we're very good at dealing with said emergencies at home because we get to practice quite a lot. Not at home, we practice in, you know, settings where the you know, we call them prompt study days. So we deal with like obstetric emergencies, but in community settings, and we're, you know, we get to practice that way. So if anything does happen, then we're well versed in dealing with it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's a great point. And just kind of continuing on the discussion of that transfer rate, because that's definitely something that women need to consider in making their choice, is that risk of potentially being transferred from the home setting into hospital setting.
What yeah, so
rates of that.
So I was not impressed by that question. So transfer rates for first time mums, so what we call primary gravidas or primips, is 45%, which is quite high percentage really, I think, with second time or third, fourth, fifth time mums, so we call them multips, that is around about 12%. So the transfer rate, though, I think people always think transfer, well, it'll be like a blue light job into hospital, you know, as you're giving birth. That transfer rate sometimes can be for things like, you know, if baby's temperature is not quite right after birth, you know, and the midwife's done it a few times and the temperature's either up or down, that might be the transfer in is for, you know, baby's observations, or it could be that mum need suturing at, you know, under hospital lighting and in theatre, or just, you know, needs, they might just need a bit of extra observation. So the transfer rates, it'd be interesting to actually break those transfer rates down in terms of what were they actually transferred in for.
That's a good point, isn't it? Because I think when we think of transfer rates, we do think of an intrapartum, so in labour complication. Yeah. Whereas like you say, actually, or it could be that mum's for some reason has changed her mind, or she's decided that actually she would like, I don't know, an epidural, which obviously you can't have at home. So it's not always because there's an emergency. It might be mum's choice, or like you say, just that little closer observation post the birth as well. So that's
a perspective. Yeah, and I don't think, you know, I've had a friend who's given birth at home, and she had a tear that needed suturing at hospital, but she had a really, really positive, lovely home birth. So just because she ended up going into hospital didn't necessarily mean that, you know, she had a poor birth experience, but she would have been included in that transfer rate, obviously.
Yeah, that's a really valid point for sure. Yeah. So when it comes to home birth, Kerry, is there some women where it may be recommended that they don't opt for a home birth?
Yeah, so in terms of, I'm very much all for women's choice, and I think a really big benefit of having continuity of your midwife is that you build up that relationship with them. And when your midwife then, you know, explains an issue that may prevent a home birth, so there's some things that definitely a home birth or even vaginal birth would be an absolute no-no. So placenta previa, for example, is where your placenta's covering your cervix. So as soon as you started to labour and your cervix started to expand, you would start to bleed, which would obviously mean that there was a threat to life for mum and baby. So in circumstances like that, it's an absolute, you would need to have a cesarean. Home birth would not be on the cards because it would be so, so unsafe. But there's a lot of things that, you know, people may advise you against a home birth, but that doesn't mean that home birth is totally out. And I think in midwifery, there's massive grey areas. And this is the sort of massive debate around risk as well within childbirth. So I always think it's quite interesting because as a community midwife, you know, if somebody says to me, you've got a 1% chance of something, then I would look at that and think, well, actually, that means that you've got a 99% chance of not having it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think more medicalised midwives and doctors, arguably, they will always see the risk, and that's because they're dealing with emergencies all the time, whereas I would deal with normal birth all the time. So I forgot what your question was now, Pete, but I lost my train of thought.
Talking about those ladies that perhaps would be recommended.
So there's obviously breech. So a footling breech would be advised to have a cesarean as well, just because of the problems that can occur during labour if you give birth naturally via vagina. So then you've got the more grey area of people like being not even diagnosed, but a sort of guesstimate of baby's weight. So big babies. A lot of people have been advised not to have home births because maybe they're going to have a big baby. And the arguments around that are really massive grey areas. So scans in your third trimester are around about 20 to 30% inaccurate for growth. So there's the argument of, well, is it really going to be a big baby? Because there's ladies that I've known, I've looked after before, that have opted for cesareans, and then babies come out and been 7 pounds. So, and it's a massive choice to make, you know, because it does have an impact on future births as well. But again, so around the risk category, so if you're diabetic, but again, this is my big thing about giving people information and choice. So if you have diabetes and your diabetes is maybe well controlled and your blood sugars are all normal, then I would argue that you are you are as normal as any other pregnant woman. Because the issue is, again, around the big babies, growing a big baby. And I think, like we've discussed before, Pip, about, you know, well, actually, if you have a big baby, the best place for you is to be in a really good position, so i.e. in the birth pool, whether that be at home or on the birth centre or, you know, the delivery suite. It's about getting into really good positions to optimise that pelvic outlet. So, it's a massive, massive grey area around risk. And but I always, my big thing is give that woman all the options and she can make the choice, because, you know, home birth does not, it's not a no-no because you have been categorized as higher risk. Again, VBAC, so vaginal birth after cesareans, there's been quite a few of them, and especially within older now, that, you know, they've gone to plan, they've had a second, third baby and successfully given birth at home after having a cesarean with the first baby. So
Just having that information, isn't it? And you raise a really great point about statistics, because like you say, sometimes we hear statistics in a sense of, well, if you did that, so if you gave birth at home or you went this many weeks overdue, your risk of stillbirth or your risk of complication doubles. But actually, we need to break that down into what.
Yeah.
You know, is that a 0.2% risk that's doubled to 0.4%? Because for lots of women, a risk of 0.4% of something still feels quite comfortable.
So yeah.
Make sure that we are giving those kind of risks or those statistics in a really balanced way, and not in a way that causes kind of scaremongering. And women need to have that, all that information, the way that they can understand, and it's nice and non-biased, I suppose.
Yeah, and definitely. And I really like the evidence-based birth website as well. And it is predominantly an American website, but a lot of the studies are done in the worldwide anyway. But it's a really good resource for women to go to as well, you know, to have a look at the evidence surrounding, you know, diabetes and home birth or, you know, anything at all. It's all available on that website.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I've checked that out. It is good. Maybe I'll try and put that in the show notes as well for people to.
Yeah.
So I guess if for women, Kerry, who are deciding that, yes, they would like to plan for a home birth, and they've been given all the informed information about all their choices, and they think, yes, great, giving birth is my home, my choice for me. to be fair, with a voice in her house. So women can have home births both on the NHS or through an independent partner.
So whoever you book with, or just let your midwife know, they will answer any questions surrounding home birth. So within the NHS, different trusts operate very differently, as we know, due to COVID as well, but generally they will have like an on-call system for the community midwives that they operate, and they will go on call for you and attend your home birth when you're in labour, when you ring them.
Oh, poor Harriet. It's really hard work being 10 weeks old.
I know.
So I think we've kind of already, Kerry, started to discuss some of the benefits of working at home in terms of reducing some of those risks of complications. And obviously having that environment which you feel comfortable and in control in, which is just going to promote all that wonderful oxytocin and suppress all of that adrenaline, which we know is notorious for scaring our contractions off, which we don't want in labour. Are there any other kind of benefits of giving birth at home that you want to just outline or mention?
Yeah, so there's, I think one of the biggest thing is the power shift. So when you're in your home, obviously you have the power, you know, it's the midwives that are guests within your house, not you being the guest in the hospital. So, you know, if somebody wants to use the toilet in your house, if you want to use it, you go use it. You don't ask anybody. The midwife comes into your house, you know, the midwife generally says to you, oh, can I just go to the loo? Whereas when you go into hospital, again, it's that the power shift is the other way. You're in sort of somebody else's territory. So I think that that's one of the main things for me around home births is that, you know, who has the power, you know, the control and the power there. There's loads of practical benefits as well. So if you've got all the children, you know, you don't need to really sort childcare out for them, because a lot of the time you go into labour overnight, so you pretty much give birth overnight, and then, you know, your toddler or child wakes up and there's a new baby there, and a lot of people think that there's screaming and shouting, and there's generally not. It's quite quiet and calm. Practicalities as well, you don't have to pay for parking at your own house generally. You know, whereas if you're going into the hospital, a lot of the time you have to pay for parking if you can find a space. And again, with COVID at the moment, there's obviously benefits around birth partners. I know that some trusts have tried to operate this, you know, you can only have one birth partner in your own house. I don't really know how that stands legally, because how do you tell somebody to get out of their own house? You know, it's really problematic. And I think a certain amount of common sense should really prevail on that point. And as well, you get an experienced midwife with you for your home birth, as you would in the hospital, but then you get a second midwife for actual, you know, the birth of baby. In the hospitals, I've found that generally you can have one midwife with you, but they're in and out of the room. And sometimes they have other ladies that they're looking after as well. And again, that's on the safety point. I would argue that it's safer at home because your midwife is with you constantly. So if there is anything that's going wrong within your labour, it's seen really, really early on. Whereas when the midwife is with somebody in labour and they're in and out of a room, sometimes things, you know, might get missed because of that sort of intermittent care almost. But yeah, no need to travel. I mean, having tightenings, I remember getting out of the bath with Imogen, coming downstairs and getting straight in the birth pool, and I could not have done a full 20-minute journey in a car. You know, that 30 second quickly getting down the stairs and into the pool was just like difficult enough. So I just think that you're so much more comfortable at home, and you've got so much more of your natural, you know, you've got your oxytocin working loads, your natural painkillers working because you're at home and you're comfortable. Obviously you need to labour wherever you feel safe. So for a lot of women, you feel safer at home. You know, if you're poorly and you're at work, you just want to be at home, tucked up, you know, with your comfortable clothing. If you are going to feel safer being in the hospital setting, then you will labour better in the hospital setting rather than at home.
Yeah, definitely. And that comes back down to us just having all that information available, doesn't it? So that women can make the choice that feels right for them and comfortable for them.
Yeah.
So if for women, Kerry, who are planning to prepare a home birth, how do we actually go about organising that? So they'll be booked by their midwife and they might express the fact that they plan a home birth, and then what kind of happens?
Yeah, so round it, you let the midwife know that you're planning a home birth. You discuss it with them. Hopefully it should have been discussed earlier on anyway, you book an appointment. Then at round about 36 weeks, most trusts have a home birth assessment, which sounds really, really formal. It's not formal at all. So it's basically an opportunity at 36 weeks for your midwife to do a home visit, where she will do your full antenatal generally at home, so your blood pressure, all your normal checks that will be done in a clinic setting will be done at home. But it's also an opportunity to discuss your birth plan as well. And, you know, I always think where I used to work on community, it was a town, it was Rochdale, so it was a town, but there were some areas that were quite countrified as well. So getting to the address, so just so that I had a kind of what we call a dry run, because I remember going to one home birth and it was on a farm in the middle of nowhere, and I'm so glad that I knew where it was because it was quite tricky to get to. So yeah, it's just things like that, and to make sure that if there's any parking issues, if you live right next door to a school, we know that if we're going to a home birth at 3 o'clock on a Friday, then the parking might be a bit chaotic and we might need to, you know, get another midwife to drop us off a bit closer to the house or things like that. So practicalities, but also an opportunity for you to, you know, get to know your midwife a little bit more, your midwife get to know you and know what you want for your birth plan, and they'll discuss things, you know, surrounding your labour and afterwards as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's not an appointment you want your midwife to be late for, is it, when you phone them and say, I'm in labour, I need you here, and they're trying to find
Sometimes it happens. So there are BBAs, which are called born before arrival of the midwife. And, you know, we have ladies that have planned a home birth and all of a sudden they have a really quick labour at home and they've not rung the midwife quite in time. But again, I would always say, you know, there's no right or wrong time to ring the midwife. And I would never, you know, tell a lady, or I'll never tell a lady off anyway, but I'd never tell her off for ringing me too early. I think it's always better to ring, and if you want me to come out, you know, I would always have come out. And yeah, there's all the practicalities around that. So.
Talking about those BBAs, those babies that are born before arrival, I feel like we have loads of those for unplanned home births anyway. So I feel like everyone can have the baby at home, and then if they don't make it in,
well, really, really interestingly, when I was working on community in the NHS, there was a winter day. It was really, really bad weather, snowing. It was thick snow. And the woman rang up the birth centre that she was going into, and she said, I'm in labour, but I'm not sure that we were going to. And she tried to get there. So her husband had put her in the car, driven her, and they'd got literally down the road and they'd had to abandon the car. They couldn't get any further, so they went back home. And some of our midwives have got, you know, four befores, so the midwife went out to her and she had a really lovely home birth that was unplanned. And she always, I remember seeing her in clinic with baby afterwards, and she always says, you know, I'm so glad that it snowed on that day because I had a really nice experience at home. And if it wasn't for that, I would have gone into hospital. So, you know,
That's a really cool story. I love that. So when you've cared for, what would you say were the kind of main benefits, I suppose, of birthing at home? I think we've discussed quite a lot about it, but if we could narrow it down to maybe some of the top benefits that you've experienced in your practice.
I would say feeling a lot more comfortable, having minimal pain relief, if anything. So women coping with labour at home, you know, you significantly reduced analgesia rate. You know, it's evidence-based to say that women who birth at home need less pain relief. And I think, again, that's because your natural hormones are working, you're comfortable. And again, it's something that we talk about a lot in hypnobirthing, but if your muscles are relaxed, then they're going to work more effectively. So and again, I think it's mind over matter. So I always say, you know, if you stub your big toe and you think about your big toe and how much it's hurting, you know, it will hurt even more. Whereas if you think about something else, and being at home is a good distraction, you know, you can get things set up, prepped, you know, nice birth affirmations on the walls, or, you know, you can get things set up in your home environment that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do in hospital. It would take a bit longer in hospital. But yeah, definitely staying calm and having a real positive birth experience, making that environment your own. Well, it's already your own, you know, and you have time to prep as well. Like, I actually enjoyed the run up to Imogen's birth because I was getting that room ready and I was like, I'm going to give birth in it, you know, and it's going to be nice and it's going to be twinkly lights and kind of almost making it into a little spa experience.
Well, especially with your lazy spa. I mean, it basically was, right? You probably had someone do some massage and some essential oil. You had your spa.
But yeah, I think they're the massive benefits. Being more relaxed, staying calm, and it being your home environment and the practicalities then as well that go with it.
Yeah, that kind of ease of practicality is definitely a selling point for mums that have got other little children, I guess.
Yeah.
So in terms of analgesia at home, we kind of alluded to the fact that women tend to need less analgesia when they're giving birth at home. And I guess your natural body's endorphins are a massive part of that. What are the analgesia options for women who are birthing at home? Because obviously it is a little more limited.
Yeah, only slightly more limited. And I think that that's a massive misconception as well. So the only thing that you can't really have at home that you would be able to have at hospital is an epidural or spinal. Everything else you can have at home. So I always advise women to start off with, you know, non-pharmaceutical methods of coping with labour. So massage, water, TENS machine, all these things that aren't drug related, you know, start off with them, because you might find that actually the TENS machine will get you through, you know, 80% of your labour with purely the TENS machine or purely with water as coping, you know, in the bath, etc. Or massage, you know, your breathing techniques. Then you can start to move up. So you can have paracetamol at home, gas and air, the midwife will bring round, so the Entonox, people will know it as gas and air. The midwife, the community midwife, will bring that round when she comes out to you. And then if you wanted, so again, different trusts operate, slightly different pain relief. So some do pethidine, some do dimorphine, but very similar. If you want anything like that, then because it's a controlled drug, it has to be kept at the hospital. Most trust policies say so. So you will tell your midwife that that's what you want. So that might be, you might know that you want it when you're in labour, before, you know, the midwife comes round to the house, and that's fine. Just let them know, and then they can either go and pick that up on the way to you, or otherwise they can call the second on-call midwife and they will go out, get that and bring it to your home address.
Yeah, definitely. So that's really good for women to know, isn't it? That actually there's a whole scope of options they'll have at home. And like I said, the evidence shows us that women quite often don't need to go quite as high up that cascade.
Yeah.
They might do in a hospital setting, which is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything comes with side effects, doesn't it? So if we can eliminate that use, then that hopefully makes women's experience a bit more positive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Amazing. So can we, Kerry, finish with your top three tips that you would give to any expectant parents, so it could be mums and dads, who are planning or considering a home birth?
I think, so the first one is be prepared. So write a birth plan, make your birth environment, your space, set that up. Spend time together doing it as well, because I think it's actually really nice and it should be a place that's really cozy. You know, pardon me. Think about your lighting, your environment, where you're going to feel safe and where you're going to birth best. So that's first top tip. Second top tip is to stay positive, because you know that as soon as you tell people, you know, and I think this alludes to my third top tip about telling people, but be positive. When you tell people that you're going to have a home birth, or you're planning on having a home birth, a little bit like when you find out you're pregnant, it seems to be that people then tell you horror stories of things. And I don't know, as women, I don't know why we do that to each other when we should really be supporting each other. So maybe be careful who you tell. A lot of people have started saying, I've not told people I'm having a home birth. I've just said, yeah, I'm going to give birth. And they've never really asked, and they've never said anything. And it's then afterwards. But I think another tip is that afterwards, please tell people about your positive birth experiences, you know, whether they're at hospital or at home, because on average, I think we tell, if we have a poor experience with something, so a bad meal in a restaurant, we tell on average 10 people. But if we have a good experience, we only tell one. And I think we really need to change that, especially around home birth and positive birth experience. You know, we really need to be telling people how brilliant it is so that they have an opportunity and know that that's a choice for them.
Definitely. That's such a great point, Kerry, because like you say, there are so many positive birth experiences of all different shapes and sizes out there, but we don't talk about those ones. We talk about that one horror story that someone said, and then it's got escalated and kind of blown a little bit out of proportion or become a bit inaccurate, and everyone focuses on that one negative experience rather than those thousands of really positive, empowering birth experiences.
I love that. I think for pregnant woman then to have that, you know, story in her mind of a real somebody that they know, or you know, they've heard this really negative thing just before they give birth, is not really conducive to being positive and having a nice birth experience yourself, because you're going to then be fearful of it. You know, I was liken it to, you know, it's like telling somebody just about when they're about to go on holiday on a long haul flight, it's like telling them to watch air crash investigations. You know, you just would never do it in any other setting. But we seem to do it around childbirth, and I really wish that we wouldn't, and we'd be more positive around it as well.
Definitely, because I'm very much, Kerry, with your ethos in that actually all birth can be really, really positive, can be such a positive, empowering experience, and creating, as we've said before, creating that environment that you can have in your own home. If for any reason then that doesn't quite go to plan, you can absolutely replicate that in any other setting. But women need to have that knowledge and information to be able to do that. So
in contrast as well. So I had my first Imogen at home with Harriet. You know, I say unfortunately I went into hospital because it wasn't my planned. It wasn't my plan A. I wanted to give birth at home again because I had such a positive experience. But I went into hospital and, you know, I walked onto that delivery suite and there was machinery, there was the resource, you know, that you use to resuscitate babies, you know, if they're born and they need a bit of resource. That was the first thing that I saw when I walked in. And as a midwife, like my heart would sink when women told me things like that. And I didn't want to see it. So me and my friend who was my midwife, you know, we covered it up. We got the sheet, we covered it up quickly and did a bit of feng shui really with the, you know, the room. And I always say, you know, if you go into the birth centre or delivery suite, that room is yours while you're there. So move things around. You know, I'm not saying bring in your paint from B&Q and start redecorating.
Actually, it's probably very grateful.
But, you know, move things around, make it your own, be inventive with things. Use the bed to kneel on instead of lying down on it. There's loads of ways that you can have such a positive birth experience. But home birth for me is just the best experience. And as a midwife, having seen them, you know, I would look and I'd think, this is just so calm and relaxing. And, you know, I'm always sad that there's not a TV program about home birth, but it would be quite boring TV because it's so relaxing.
Yeah, that's true. It would be the drama that sells.
Yeah.
I guess from me and Kerry's point of view, our take home to anyone listening today is just to consider it. Think of it as absolutely a valid option for your birth setting. Ask those questions. Do that research. Look at the birth study that was done in 2010 about the kind of safety elements if that's a concern for you, and just give yourself all that information so you can make that informed choice. But know that it is a choice. I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Kerry, and also Harriet, because I know we've massively interrupted that afternoon snack.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, home birth is fantastic. Please go out there and research it if you're not aware of your options around it, and discuss it with your midwife.
Definitely. And then share your wonderful, positive experiences.
Yes, definitely.
Thanks, Kerry. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you found it helpful, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. It really does make a huge difference to the number of women we can reach out to and empower. For daily free information, inspiration, or details on our bespoke antenatal education courses, head over to my social medias at midwife_pip and my website midwifepip.com. I would love to hear from expectant mums who have found this episode useful and wish to embrace further support on their wellness journey. Pop your details in the Your Pregnancy Journey tab on my website, and I will be back in touch. Thank you, and see you next time.